Welcome to Wines We Drink, a podcast for wine lovers and learners. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and together with my counterpart Keith Herndon, we'll be exploring a new wine each week. Keith is a lover of wine, and I am a learner of wine, and we hope that you'll continue learning and sipping along with us. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Wines We Drink. You've found a podcast that we like to say is for both the wine learner and the wine lover. I'm Charlotte Norsworthy Varnum, and I'm here today with my co-host and certified wine sommelier, Keith Herndon.
Thanks, Charlotte. And for all of our listeners, welcome to our eighth episode of our third season, The Summer is Moving Right Along.
It is, and I'm a little sad about it, but we are still able to relax and enjoy these summer months because we typically have a delicious glass of wine in one hand, and we like talking about the wine that we're holding, and that's certainly true for this podcast, which we call our Summer Fun Project. Last week, we had a lot of fun with Keith's Wine Summer School on Sherry, and if you missed it or any other episodes from this season or our first two seasons, you can find us on all of the major podcast platforms. We also have an episode guide for your convenience at wineswedrink.com.
So far this season, Charlotte, we've enjoyed some delicious whites, a nice sparkling wine, a fabulous rosé, and even a Pinot Grigio in the Ramato style or copper style, as you say. So don't you think it's time we dive into some red wines during the weeks we have left?
I agree. I think it's time for some reds.
Well, we're going to jump head first, okay, by drinking a luscious red blend, 50% Cabernet Sauvignon and 50% Syrah. Those are two bold grape varietals that come together to create this really compelling wine proposition that we're going to be sampling today.
That sounds very promising. Can you tell me more?
Well, interestingly, these two grape varietals are very well known and popular on their end. A blend of the two, well, not so much, okay? Wine writer Roger Morris had a fascinating article about this Cab Syrah blend in last fall's issue of the American Wine Society's Wine Journal. He wrote that while this blend is, quote, hardly unknown, the combination is way down on the list of common red blends, end quote. You know, just continuing in the article, he wrote later that, quote, there has been a perception through the years of a slightly back alley aura of Cab plus Syrah, a love that dare not speak its name, unquote.
I love that. It's sort of a forbidden love story in the world of wine.
Well, yes, in a way, that's true. You know, I think you have to look at the origin of the two varietals to understand why there just hasn't been this natural consideration of these two varietals as natural partners. First, Cabernet Sauvignon hails from France's Bordeaux region, while Syrah was born in the Rhone region. Cabernet Sauvignon ripens late in the season, while Syrah ripens earlier. So different regions and different ripening dates, you know, not a natural, natural historical combination. But I think winemakers have begun to look past that history and see two varietals that are both tannic, and that helps them both age well. And then moreover, the flavor profiles really complement each other. A typical Cabernet Sauvignon will express the flavors of fruit, such as blackberries and black currants and some cherries, while a Syrah is going to be less fruit-forward and more known for its spice and pepper notes.
Yeah, the combo sounds delicious, and I'm surprised it hasn't been more popular historically.
Well, you and me both, right? But we're going to experience a really good example of this combination today.
Okay, well, what are we waiting for? Let's get started.
Okay. Well, last week with our sherry tasting, we broke with tradition. Normally on our podcast, we only open one bottle and talk about that specific bottle. But, you know, last week I wanted to show some range of sherry styles. So we sampled three different bottles representing three different styles, from a dry fino to a sweet PX. So today we're going to be breaking tradition again.
Well, what did you have in mind?
Well, Charlotte, this blend of these two age-worthy wines, it's a good time to taste a new bottle and compare it to the same wine, but with a few more years on it.
Well, I'm very much on board for this experiment. I mean, that means we get to open two bottles today, so there's no complaints from me.
Yeah, but let's not give our listeners the wrong impression. We're not going to finish off two bottles ourselves. We'll have a little help from our friends and family once we finish the recording today, okay?
Okay, okay. I'll share. But first, we'll need to start pouring some glasses, right?
Yeah, right. So we're starting with our 2021 Maison Bourbelot. That features grapes from the Pays d'Arc, more specifically in the Languedoc region of southern France. And remember, as I said earlier, this is an equal blend of 50% Cabernet Sauvignon and 50% Syrah. So as I pour this blend, how would you describe the colors for our listeners?
Let's take a look.
Let's get this one over here. I'm going to bring the glass closer to the mic so our listeners can hear the sound of that going into the glass.
The good pour sound. I mean, as you're pouring, I would call this a very dark red wine. Almost even like a deep purple, like a dark magenta.
Yes, yes. It is exactly what I think this blend should look like, right? When somebody tells me I'm going to be pouring a 50% Cab, 50% Syrah blend, you know, these are two of the so-called noble grapes. So that rich, deep color is appropriate. So go ahead and put your nose in there and tell us what aromas you find most prominent.
Mm. Wow, yeah. There's definite fruit-forward notes there. So we were talking about cherry. I'm getting some strong cherry aromas. But I'm also getting a little hint of vanilla. You know, it's kind of a pleasing, desserty combination. Not in a sweet way, but in a natural pairing kind of way.
So that's great. Those are some great observations. So let's go in for that first taste and think of some of the flavor profiles that are now coming to mind.
Mmm. Oh, wow. You know, without a doubt, those cherry aromas are coming through with the cherry flavor. But there are also the dark fruits, you know, as you would expect. There's blackberry, blueberry.
You know, the fruit flavors in this wine are a great strength, you know. But when I, you know, I'm going to have one more sip here just to kind of make sure I'm sensing what I wanted to say there. You know, yeah, for me, there is this plum and some raisin in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the raisin is not as strong as it was in our sherry episode last week, but,
agreed.
You know, but I like how this wine shows its tannins. There's some astringency there. There's kind of a nice dryness to it, but it's not, you know, mouth puckering.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I would agree. It definitely hits later on in the taste, that dryness, but it adds a really nice feeling of tartness that you would get from a fresh cherry. Okay, so are we ready to move to compare it to this older vintage?
Yes. So we're going to go back to 2017, not too far back, but enough years to see how this is holding up in the bottle. With these extra years, I thought it best to open this one up and let it decant a bit. And so while we've been talking, it's been sitting there in a decanter, and I just think that helped it open up a little bit, right?
Okay, so as you're pouring in the glass, I will admit they look the same. Even though they have some significant time difference, we're doing a 2017 versus a 2021. I don't know. They're very similar.
Yeah, it's still a dark purple. So, go in there and let's do our normal process, right?
Okay.
Have it a smell.
Interesting. Okay. The fruit aromas, they're taking a little bit more of a backseat, I would say, for this one. The earthy smells are hitting me first. Almost like I'm getting some leather.
Yeah, that sounds a little, yeah, it's had some age on it, you know, not a lot. This is not an old bottle of wine necessarily. So, you know, so give this one a sip and see how those fruit flavors are faring.
Okay. Mm. Okay. Well, I wouldn't say the blackberry is totally gone, but there's definitely more oak, more vanilla coming through. I'm sensing some more of the Syrah notes in there, like you were talking about, some pepper, some cinnamon. Definitely more of a grounded flavor on this one.
Yeah, it's almost like the characteristics have traded places, right?
Yeah.
I felt the Cabernet fruit notes were much stronger in the 21 vintage, and now in this 17 vintage, the Syrah spiciness is more at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. I mean, while you were talking, I've been having more sips, and I think this older bottle is smoother somehow. I mean, you described the 21 as having some astringency to it, and I would agree, but I don't really get that from this one. It's much more sippable. There isn't as much of an edge to it.
You know, you've hit on it. I think those extra years in the bottle have mellowed this out a bit, and wow, I think it now has this wonderfully lingering finish that just feels a little more refined.
Yeah. And another thing I've noticed about both the 21 and the 17 is that you really don't come away with much of an alcohol sensation as you would expect from a red.
Right. Well, you're not imagining that, Charlotte, okay? It's not uncommon to find these varietals with alcohol by volume in the 14.5% to more than 15% range, right? And that was what I was expecting here. But no, these two are 13% and 13.5%, right? Hmm. Alcohol by volume. That may not sound like much of a difference, but to me, it contributes to a little bit more of an overall drinkability. There's just more of that sippable quality, as you mentioned. You don't have any kind of an alcohol bite with the finish on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. It's very much a drinkable wine. No matter if you have the younger bottle or if you happen to find an older one stashed around somewhere. So, of course, you know, my favorite part of a conversation is always about how you can pair these with food. And so how would you pair either of these red blends with food?
Well, let's start with a cheese pairing for this wine, okay? My suggestion is Gouda.
Ooh.
And this flavor profile, especially the older bottle, is going to pair nicely with a smoked version. You know, those earthy qualities and that smoke, that just makes a perfect pairing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense. And it sounds like it would be terrific. I'm assuming, though, this hearty red will hold up with some nice steaks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're not wrong about that. I suggest tossing some juicy sirloins on the grill and you'll be set. But let me add that you don't have to think fancy with this wine, right? I'm going to get into some of that a little bit later in the episode. But I want our listeners to think at this point that you can view this as an everyday wine, right? This is a go-to pairing for some everyday foods to go with that everyday wine. One of the reviews I found for this wine suggested pairing it with meatloaf.
Meatloaf. Okay.
So here we go. I have actually made some meatloaf for you. There's a slice on a plate, so I want you to take a bite and sip it with one of these wines. You can do the 17 or the 21 and see what you think.
Okay. Okay, here we go. This smells really good. Man, the texture of that meatloaf, the meatiness, all the spices in there, the slight sweetness, and then the spiciness of the 17 especially, they just work so well together. I mean, and that's a great idea behind an everyday pairing that I can enjoy on a weeknight, you know? And we're calling this an everyday wine, so I'm assuming then that the cost is going to reflect that idea?
Yeah, today I'm going to ask you to wait for that pricing information until after the break.
Okay.
It's part of the reveal I have planned for today's The Finish.
Okay. Well, that gets me a little excited. So we're going to take a short break then. I'm going to continue eating this amazing meatloaf and drinking this wonderful red blend. We'll be back shortly with a segment of the show we call The Finish. And I guess we're going to hear Keith's big reveal. Thank you. Welcome back to Wines We Drink. This is the portion of the show we call The Finish. Today, Keith is going to let us in on some more details about today's red blend, a wonderful 50-50 mix of Cabernet Sauvignon and Syrah.
Thanks, Charlotte. If you recall from earlier in the episode, I reference an article from the Wine Journal about Cabernet Sauvignon Syrah blends. That article concluded with a brief discussion about pricing, and the author mentioned a variety of labels going from around $40 all the way up to $300.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But not this one.
Okay. So what are we talking about then for today's selection?
Would you believe $6.99?
What? Are you kidding me? That's like, you know, Trader Joe's pricing.
Well, you got me, okay? Trader Joe's is where you'll find a bottle of Maison Barbalou.
Oh my goodness.
They've been selling this label for years, and it's consistently wonderful. There are thousands of ratings for this popular wine on the Vivino app. The 2017 was rated among the top 7% of wines in the world, and the 2021 bettered that rating as among the top 5% wines in the world. And so for the money at $6.99 a bottle, or give or take, you know, it's a steal of a deal.
Oh my goodness. I am stunned. I did not see that coming. What? I was not expecting you to actually feature a Trader Joe's wine. That's where I get my wines.
I'm not that picky, okay? I'll buy a good wine from anywhere that you can find quality and value. You know, so as we often say on this show, you know, price is not always a reflection of a wine's quality.
You have said that, and today is truly the most proof. You know, how do they do it, though? I mean, how does a grocery chain feature such high-quality wine for well under $10?
Well, for starters, there's very little marketing tied up in this label. Maison Barbalou doesn't really exist. I mean, there's not a chateau in the south of France where you'll find that name. It's essentially a made-up private label.
Okay.
So there's no giant estate, you know, that has to support itself on the back of this wine.
So if there's no Maison Barbalou, where does this wine come from then?
Okay. Well, that's a great question, and it isn't readily apparent. I mean, there are some indications on its label, if you really look at the back and read some of the fine print, but there's not really a strong indication of the label of who makes it, right?
Okay.
So I did some internet sleuthing. I found some material from a wine trade show in France that featured a picture of the bottle and a link to its maker. So it turns out to be a private label producer named LGI Wines.
Okay, that's fascinating. You know, I wasn't even aware that that was a thing, that private label makers of wine existed.
Well, yes, they do. And this one is very well established with great reputation. When I was doing that internet sleuthing, you know, I went to its website and there's a lot of background on LGI there. It was founded in 1999. Its current management team has been leading the company since 2013. The company is known for its expertise in sourcing quality grapes, and they have production arrangements with at least 7 wineries, you know, according to some of the material that I found online.
Hmm. Again, this is all so fascinating to me. You know, you see a bottle on the shelf at Trader Joe's. Most don't stop to consider who makes it, aka me. I've never stopped to consider at Trader Joe's who's making those wines.
Well, you know, I think that speaks to the relationship a chain like Trader Joe's has with its customers. I mean, there's an established trust relationship there. But then again, its partners have to deliver. And LGI seems to have a robust business going, right? The online material reported that it exported more than 3 million cases of wine to the U.S., the U.K., Germany, and the Netherlands, and a few other countries. So that's a pretty big wine business.
Yeah, I mean, so then would our listeners recognize any of the other labels that it produces?
It's possible. I couldn't determine if there are any other major retailer private labels from LGI. I'm assuming that there are. But I did learn that it makes Big Red Beast, a red blend that gets top reviews on Vivino, and a rosé from the Côte de Provence sold under the Joli May label. They have a variety of other labels that sell Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Viognier, a lot of other blends and varietals. You know, again, it's a pretty big operation, even if they do try to keep well behind the scenes.
Wow. Okay. Well, another episode full of interesting details about really good wine. That is an impressive finish for episode 8, season 3. Where are we going next week?
Well, our approach next week is the exact opposite of today's episode. Rather than nearly an anonymous winemaker hiding behind a private label, we'll be featuring a husband and wife team who put themselves and their family's history at the forefront of their brand.
Well, that sounds like a plan.
Yes, we'll be drinking one of my favorite red varietals, a Sangiovese. But this one hails from a place a world away from Italy's Chianti.
Okay. Well, wherever you're taking us next week, I'm sure the wine will be amazing, as always. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Join us again next week.
Yes, thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Wines We Drink. Listen to our other episodes anywhere you get your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on Twitter @WinesWeDrink and on Instagram @TheWinesWeDrink. Cheers.